up, and he had felt Astra lose her connection to her bastion. Had Omria truly gifted her immortality? Was this the power of a goddess? Or, Nathan wondered, was this the power of a messenger or a being such as Kadria's boss? Whatever the case, it meant that gems could be modified by other beings. Nathan needed to be on the lookout for signs of strange gem abilities or anything similar.
Enough! All champions, stand down by the orders of the one true council of Aurelia,
a counselor shouted at the top of her lungs. She looked genuinely old, but like most dark elves, aged gracefully. Nathan suspected she had to be over 150 years old. The dark elves, still in combat, fell back. Only the one fighting Fae didn't, mostly because she was in no state to do so.
"Somebody put that wretch out of her misery," the counselor snapped.
Before anybody else reacted, Fae managed to snap her opponent's neck. Her sapphires glowed so brightly that Nathan worried they were about to explode. Had Fae overfilled them with magic somehow? The enemy champions glared at Fae, but she simply blew flames at them.
"Council, they are traitors! We must—"
one of the dark elf champions began to say.
"Silence!"
the guards next to the council roared, nearly deafening Nathan. Fae squeaked, then glared at them.
"The council passes judgment, not mere soldiers,"
the female counselor snapped, glaring at the champions below her.
"Leave us!"
"But
leave!"
the guards bellowed. Long ears drooping, the dark elf champions scattered. Before Nathan could do so as well, the counselor gestured to him.
"Stay, Lord Nathan," she said,
before taking a seat again. The guards glared at him. One of them whispered into the counselor's ear, and she rolled her eyes and said something to him in return. Nathan stepped into the center of the chamber.
Do we need this?" Fae asked, pointing at the corpse of Astra's former bastion.
"No," Astra said, before anybody else could disagree. An instant later, Fae reduced the body to ash. The dark elves watched in silence. If they disagreed, they kept their opinions and emotions to themselves. Truthfully, they probably appreciated it. Fae had disposed of the evidence for them in as convenient a manner as possible. The council could make up whatever story they wished to explain his disappearance. The female counselor said something to the guard, who then said,
"Where is Ambassador Soreve?"
The others looked at Nathan in confusion, save for Astra. They wondered why the council didn't speak to Nathan directly. Nathan sighed.
"Can we not play this game?"
The guard opened his mouth to argue. Nathan pressed his point before he was hounded by the dark elf dogs.
"There's no crowd jeering at us. Nobody is asking you to kick us off the edge."
He jabbed a thumb at the void behind him.
"This meeting is off the public record, effectively. The champions have no influence. None of you will be voted out because you actually talked to me instead of carrying out this pointless pantomime."
He looked each of the council members in the eye. Two of them glared back, but three returned his gaze blandly.
"You presume much for someone who knows nothing of the spires, whelp,"
a muscled and bald counselor said.
"He seems to know plenty, Lycrius,"
a lanky and young dark elf said. He had by far the most piercings visible, and showed the most skin. His name was Dimitri, if Nathan recalled. He and the woman had been the only two counselors he recognized from his world.
"It doesn't matter what he knows. This is unwise,"
a practically ancient man said.
"Oh, shut up, evil. What's been unwise is letting things get to this point."
The final counselor was a veritable giant of a dark elf, with thick, long hair full of jewelry.
"Can we focus?" the female counselor said. "Doran, don't provoke other counselors."
"Yes, dear," Doran said,
a smirk crossing his face.
Do not.
Her eyes flashed. She turned to face Nathan and rested her face in one hand.
You are correct, Lord Nathan. This is a private affair. But that does not mean we should suspend our traditions.
I'd make a joke about whether your tradition is about mocking humans, but I already asked Sarive that, Nathan said. Counselor, he paused, trying to remember her name. Valeria, let's not waste time. Enough has been wasted as is. She raised an eyebrow at his usage of her name. The guards simmered.
This is a waste of time, Ivo said.
Shut up, the giant Doran said.
He stared down at Nathan.
So, where's Sarive? I figured he'd be with you, and he'll need to talk to the other bastions after this.
Downstairs. This didn't seem like a situation for him.
And what exactly do you think this situation was? Because it doesn't look good for you. A bastion from the Empire assisting with treason is not something we can overlook.
Nathan resisted the urge to roll his eyes. Beside him, Astra's face scrunched up in confusion. She looked at each of the counselors, one by one.
A coup, and a fairly obvious one at that, Nathan said.
He raised a hand to forestall any rejoinder, as the angry old men on the council opened their mouths to argue.
I just said not to waste time. Do you often debate breaking your alliance with the Empire while surrounded by dozens of champions, while the bastions claim demons are invading at the same time?
Dimitri laughed.
No wonder Sarive likes you.
He looked at the other counselors and pointed at Nathan.
Can we keep him?
They ignored him.
You're admitting to being behind this?
Ivo asked, the old man leaning forward. The guards muttered to each other. Astra instantly opened her mouth.
I am, Nathan declared, talking over the Trigem champion. I'm not about to let a close ally of the Empire fall to a military coup due to a treasonous bastion. I convinced Astra to help me and ensured Sarive couldn't warn anybody.
A fairly transparent effort to shelter them. But both Dimitri and Doran nodded at him, and he somehow knew he had made the right call. Nathan didn't know most of the council, but Dimitri and Valeria were trustworthy. They had remained in the spires until the very end in his world. If Doran was on their side, then that made Ivo and Lacrius suspicious. Not that Nathan knew Dark Elf politics well enough to say that for sure. Valeria sighed, rubbing the bridge of her nose. Faye giggled at the motion, looking at Nathan. She likely thought it funny that he shared the same stress tick as Valeria.
It will take us years to recover from this. We have lost a bastion. Dozens of champions are without their power, and the spires will be in turmoil once we find out. Was intervention truly worth the price, Lord Nathan?
Valeria asked.
The price is nothing compared to the alternative, Nathan said coldly. The spires must remain standing and strong. At no point should you ever be considering using what I know is hidden beneath this very chamber.
He slammed a foot down on the slate flooring. A chill ran through the chamber. The counselors stared at him with wide eyes, and even Astra appeared to be shocked. Doran started clapping.
Well, now I know why Gortal sent you.
The other counselors glared at him, but he simply smirked back at them.
Thank you for your time, Lord Nathan, Valeria said. We will need time to consider what happened tonight. Ambassador Sarive will speak to you later and summon you once we are ready to relay to you our decision.
The guards didn't bellow out a dismissal. Instead, Nathan simply walked out of the chamber. Astra remained behind to talk to the council.
They found Sarive immediately outside the chamber, and he nodded to them as he walked past with several guards. Clearly, the council had moved quickly to summon him.
"What's hidden beneath the chamber?" Faye asked with wide eyes as they left.
Nathan made an explosion gesture with his hands. The others stared at him. "Do you really think that a race that spent millennia as slaves would ever willingly return to it?" he asked rhetorically. "It's their failsafe. The spires will never be taken by force."
The next few days passed uneventfully. Nathan was allowed to leave the Jorman spire, although he didn't bother. Being glared at and mocked by a bunch of dark elves wasn't his idea of a good time. But he let his champions go with Astra, and they came back with bags of things they wouldn't show him. Kiana's face, when he inquired, spoke volumes. Nerevia slipped away one morning. Nathan caught her when she crept through the common room.
"Going back to Tarban?" he asked.
Despite his mixed feelings about her, disappointment welled up inside him. Nerevia refused to meet his gaze.
"I mean, we're done here. If I stay any longer, the council might make an example of me to cover things up."
"You have a choice, you know."
"I..."
She finally looked at him, and her purple eyes held a look of regret he found unfamiliar. "I want you. Badly. You exude a suffocating pressure that I can't get enough of, even if you don't do everything I'd like."
He waited for her to finish.
"But I'm not a traitor," she said, looking down. "Tarban hasn't done anything I haven't asked him to."
"Do you actually believe that?" Nathan asked.
She scowled. "Fuck you."
She stormed off.
"The door's always open, at least so long as you don't do something you'll regret," he called after her.
He meant that, surprisingly. Absence made the heart grow fonder. Nathan didn't know if he could trust Nerevia, but he found her biting presence comforting in an odd way. And it's not like he really worried about her betraying him. The fact she returned to Tarban after all of this spoke volumes about her loyalty, even if it was misplaced. Nathan merely needed to find a way to deal with Tarban. One day, Sarive approached him.
"The council has given us permission to question Tanius," he said.
They ascended to a jail in the upper levels of the spire. The wards around the cells prickled at Nathan's senses as he entered them. Tanius's cell was sparsely furnished. He had a bed, a chair, a bookshelf, and a combined shower and toilet. The man himself appeared to be in good health. His white hair was closely cropped, as always, and he still had his wiry muscle. The main difference was how dim his eyes were. In past encounters, they had contained a fire. Tanius had once been a man possessed with spirit. Now he was broken. Astra entered the cell with Sarive and Nathan, but the jailers remained outside.
"How amusing," Tanius said.
He folded the corner of the page he was reading, then closed his book.
"I didn't expect to see you so soon."
He nodded at Sarive.
"It's been some time, Ambassador."
Neither Nathan nor Sarive answered. Instead, Nathan looked around the cell and reached out with his magical senses. These strange wards stabbed at him.
"We are under watch," Sarive advised him.
"I figured," Nathan replied.
He then raised a hand and cast wards over the cell. Sarive blinked.
"That felt unfamiliar," the ambassador said.
"It should," Astra said, earning her a glare.
"A conversation you don't want overheard?" Tanius asked, a smile forming on his lips. "I believe I told you plenty last time."
"You were also drunk," Nathan said. "I have some fairly specific questions this time. My head's in the game now."
"Ah, how curious. I'm all ears. If they're interesting enough, I promise I'll answer truthfully," Tanius said, his eyes glittering.
even if they implicate you? I'm going to die here anyway. How can the truth hurt me? The old man laughed. Lies might aid you, however. I get the feeling you know enough to see through them. I hear things about you, despite being in here. Curious things, Lord Nathan. Tonius drew out the syllables with a smirk. Amazing that people refer to a mere bastion as a lord. Nathan ignored the jibe. Did you have any involvement in the cascade? How boring. I already told you the answer. This is related to something more interesting. I'm pretty sure I know who did it, Nathan said. Tonius hummed. Fine. I'll humor you. The answer is still no. Did you make any attempt to kill Princess Alice or Countess von Clair? The old man stared at him. His lips thinned, and he steepled his hands in front of him. The old Tonius slowly returned. No. Nathan nodded. Who passed on the information about Princess Alice going to Falmir during winter? Tonius's eyes nearly glowed. Fire returned to them. Who do you think? A chill ran down Nathan's spine. Falmir. Tonius whistled, even as Cerive and Astra stared at Nathan in shock. Indeed. The old man leaned back and cracked his knuckles, a smirk crossing his face. They were involved from the start. We coordinated our plans to attack Garrick Pass with Falmir, so they would tie up the Imperial Army in the west. When that failed, they provided intelligence to try to keep the war going. They underestimated you, however. Nathan closed his eyes. He ignored Cerive's follow-up question and Tonius's sarcastic answer. The facts added up. In Nathan's world, he and other champions had deployed to the borders of the Empire months ahead of its collapse. He had believed it was due to rising tensions. But now that he was older, he knew how odd it was to deploy so much military strength to the border of a friendly neighbor. Were Trefome involved? He asked, rubbing his nose. Not with me, Tonius said. Of course, we met here. Silence. Cerive looked around as if expecting to be attacked. My wards prevent anybody from eavesdropping, Nathan said. Don't worry about spies. Shit, Cerive breathed. I thought we were dead. Impressive, Tonius said. Then I'll tell you the rest, although I doubt you need to hear it. I never worked with the Council. Too public for a human like me. And your nationalists detest foreigners, so Tarbin was out. I worked with proxies from Falmir and the Spire's bastions. Astra ground her teeth. All of them? Yours and one that retired, Tonius said. Then that means your only active connection is dead, Nathan said. Plausible deniability, Cerive said. Yes. I won't ask what happened, but that sounds convenient. Tonius shrugged. I'm sure you can work out how the cascade happened. Falmir wanted a large enough war to distract the Empire so it could invade. I stopped them at Garrick Pass. Then I nearly achieved peace, so they triggered the cascade. Presumably, they're also working with Tarbin to agitate the bastions here. Nerevia knew Gareth's name, and he's... Nathan sighed. Well, he tried to openly assassinate somebody in Alaik. So what will you do? Tonius asked. Nathan stood, then walked to the exit. He banished his wards. What I'm already doing. It seems to be working well enough, he said. Then he left. The Council summoned Nathan and Astra later that day. This time, there was nobody else present other than their guards. The chamber appeared eerily empty. The counselors appeared to be grumpy, save for Valeria,
whose face was a mask. Nathan and Astra stood in the center. Sarive left when instructed. Leaning forward, Valeria spoke softly.
After much deliberation, the Council has made its decision. Grand Marshal Astra, you are to be exiled.
Astra tilted her head in confusion, her eyes widening. The faces of the guards stiffened, and their grips tightened on their weapons. But they didn't look at Astra. Instead, they glared at the various counselors. A pit formed in Nathan's stomach. Was he about to witness another coup? Days after stopping the first? Astra was a legend. Or was this intentional? Nathan had no idea what was happening. Despite that, he intervened and stepped forward. "That's a mistake," he said.
"This does not concern you," Valeria said.
"It does, because I'll claim Astra as my champion the moment she leaves here," Nathan said. The dark elf in question turned and stared at him in shock.
"How dare you?"
Ivo said, rising from his seat. "Shut up," Nathan snapped. "I killed the Bastion. If you punish Astra for it, then I'll take her. But I don't think you want that. She's your legend. So why don't we cut a deal?" Ivo's eyes bulged. The young counselor, Dimitri, spoke up. "All right." Everybody stared at him, including the guards. Dimitri grinned. "It'll be a while before we can find the Bastion our legend can trust." His eyes glittered, and Nathan suddenly realized what was going on.
"Why don't you hold on to her for the time being? In exchange, you won't speak a word of what has happened here. The Spires will maintain its alliance with the Anfeng Empire, so long as you hold up your end of the bargain and help us defend our portals if necessary. She is our legend, after all."
He winked.
"A fair deal, given the circumstances," Doran grunted out.
Valeria nodded. Nathan relaxed. This felt almost too easy, as if their intention had been to get Astra out of the Spires to begin with. Out of reach of their current bastions, that is. And it gave them a convenient excuse to support the Empire.
"Hold on, that's not what we agreed," Ivo said.
"Agreements change," Duran said. "I feel that we're done here."
"We are. Until next we meet, Lord Nathan, Astra."
Valeria gave Astra a sad smile as her mask slipped. One of the counselors, Lacrius, remained silent. He looked to the chamber entrance for a long moment, as if looking for someone. The council stood and left as one, taking their guards with them. Nathan and Astra stood alone in the chamber, surrounded by the cold, unfeeling stone of the spires. Astra stared at the empty balconies in shock. For the first time that Nathan recalled, her green eyes looked lost. She clenched and unclenched her fists. "Astra," he called out, before placing a hand on her shoulder. She turned to face him, unshed tears shimmering in her eyes. "It's time to go." Chapter 24. Nathan remembered his first meeting with Astra all too well. She crossed with him during his first visit with Charlotte and the others, back in his original world. With one look of her piercing green eyes, she dismissed him.
"Weak," she said, and strode off.
Gareth and Vala had chuckled, while Nadime and Charlotte gave him sympathetic looks. Astra's rebuke had been directed solely at Nathan. His younger self had done his best not to take it personally, but it had stung to have a living legend insult him. He should have realized that having any attention paid to him at all was special. During his next visit, he ended up sparring with her while Charlotte negotiated.
The council still refused to help with the Federation. The clock ticked away. Nathan passed the time in the training halls of the Jorman Spire. At some point, Astra showed up and began to repeatedly floor him. It became a ritual of sorts. The moment she showed up, everybody cleared out, and she beat up on him. It pissed him off, but he learned a lot. Vala laughed from the sidelines. "Why fight?" Astra asked him. "Words," he grunted out, trying to dodge her palm strike. She fainted and sent him sprawling with a knee. "Why do you fight?" she corrected. For whatever reason, she got worse at talking the more time he spent with her. Wasn't it usually the other way around with her type? "You mean here? Against the demons? For Falmir? Philosophically?" he asked, while lying on his back. She kicked him in the ribs for being a smartass. He coughed up a lung, then did his best to use regenerative magic on himself. Once he recovered the ability to talk, he grabbed a cold drink and sat down. His gaze landed on Vala, who was teaching a monogem champion how to focus her gem ability better. Despite himself, he felt his gaze soften. How many years had he been with her? Even with his new champions and the affections of Nerevia and Kiana, he still cared deeply for her.
"Better. Strong eyes," Astra said, smiling. "I get it."
He looked back at her. "What? No, I fight to protect everyone. Vala is, well, she fights to protect me, and I protect her." Astra shook her head.
"So young."
Her comment annoyed him, so he sparred with her again. Naturally, she beat him up. Time passed. He saw her from time to time. They never became close, but he talked with her often enough to understand her, even when she was being uncommunicative. The giddiness of being close to a living legend wore off, and he eventually found her bad habits and antisocial behavior more irritating than endearing. Then everything went to hell. Nadime killed Tanius. The Federation collapsed. Arcadia exploded in civil war. Messengers and demons tore across the eastern stretch of Domar. Falmir and Trafome initiated their plans for mass evacuation and a defensive line along the Garrick Mountains and the remains of the Anfeng Empire. Charlotte returned home. Gareth became busy preparing defenses at Garrick Pass. Nathan's job was to defend Forzel Valley. That also meant he needed to convince the spires to evacuate. Millions of dark elves were in danger, to say nothing of dozens of powerful warriors. The spires weren't a fortress. Defending them was insanity.
"Our decision is final," Valeria declared, and stormed off along with most of the council.
Dimitri remained behind, playing with his bejeweled hair. Nathan raised his hands, as if asking why.
"Our ancestors claimed this home with blood and anguish. They slaved in the mountains for thousands of years for the fairies," Dimitri said, his genial demeanor missing. "This is our legacy, left to us by the goddess. Omria's will granted us glory. Perhaps it is by her will that she takes it from us."
"I don't think the demons have anything to do with the goddess," Nathan said.
"Perhaps. But my race was born here. I will not abandon our home."
"Good luck, Nathan. May Omria guide you."
With those words, Dimitri left. The Dark Elves refused to abandon the spires in the face of the incoming demonic horde. That night, Nathan drank with Astra for the first time. He learned of her obscene alcohol tolerance. Nerevia loved vodka, but this was his first time drinking it straight.
"I don't get it," he growled. "This is insanity. You know how huge the horde is. You've fought messengers. They're obscenely strong, and getting stronger."
Astra drained her glass and poured more.
"This is home."
"I know that, but can't you find a new home?"
He scratched his head. If you're dead, that's it. I have champions who lost their homes, but they have a future. You'll lose yours. So will everybody else. She didn't answer. Minutes passed in silence.
Why do you fight? She asked.
It took him a while to remember that she had asked him the same question months ago. To protect everyone, he said resolutely. My champions, my princess, the people fleeing across the mountain range, the soldiers, all those people who will die. His expression darkened. All those people who shouldn't have died.
Really?
Astra asked.
Yes.
She sighed and seemed to pause to think.
What about Vala?
He stared at her. She's, like I said, I'm fighting for everybody, even for you. Astra looked away.
You asked. This is home. I fight for it.
He opened his mouth to argue, but she raised a hand. Her face screwed up in concentration, which he knew meant she wanted to say something longer.
All of the people I fight for are buried here, Astra said with a sad smile. Generations of champions I trained. Bastions I fought for. Counselors I hated. People who trusted me. I am Astra, legend. This is home. My home.
Nathan stared at her. Slowly, the truth crashed home in his head. Astra had watched the rise and fall of countless generations of dark elves. To Nathan, Falmir was his home, but only because he had grown up there. By contrast, Astra had buried several lifetimes' worth of friends here. She didn't speak of distant ancestors who bled for her sake, only of her precious memories. Nathan couldn't understand, but he realized that was all right. He hadn't lived Astra's life, and she was old enough to make her own decisions. The next day, the nightmare worsened. A cascade rippled through the spires. A messenger nearly broke through the portal in the mountains next to the spires. A dozen dark elf champions died, and Astra's bastion had been killed. They had been reduced to a single bastion now, in command of the Valley Binding Stone. Nathan had stopped the messenger only by taking control of the Binding Stone in the mountains. The remaining Dark Elf Bastion rapidly took back control of as many champions as possible, but he wasn't strong enough for Astra. A Trigem champion was too much for him.
Help me, Astra asked Nathan once she cornered him.
He stared at her as her request slowly sunk in. Caravans of Dark Elves poured out of the city behind him. Although the military and council remained, the close call with the messenger had spooked the civilians. A general evacuation began.
You'll die, Nathan said. You can still leave.
Astra didn't repeat her words from the other night. Instead, she simply stared at him, her piercing green eyes pressing him to help.
You have a chance to walk away, he said. You're not a champion. But if I claim you...
She shook her head. No. That sealed it for him. If Astra wouldn't leave, no matter what, he would honor her wishes. He conducted the gem reactivation ceremony. It was immensely difficult, given she was a trigem. The process exhausted him. Once it was done, he topped up her opals. Her gems felt odd, but he didn't pry.
Astra, if you're staying, he began to say.
She cupped his face in her hands and leaned forward.
Become strong, Nathan, she said. Thank you.
A small part of him understood what she meant. The rest of him ignored it, and he simply left. Astra watched him go with a gentle smile. When the demons came, he defended Forzel Valley with everything he had. His defenses slowly wore down, and he knew his efforts were hopeless. He felt Astra's gem constantly, as well as the invasions that struck at the spires, through the binding stone. Then she vanished. His heart stopped. The world seemed to compress in on itself for an instant. His eyes turned to the mountains in the distance, where the shadows of the spires could be faintly seen. The air shattered with an explosion of purple and blue flames. More explosions rippled outward from the spires. The earth rumbled, and parts of the mountainside fell away. The home of the Dark Elves became consumed in a magical detonation miles wide. Gusts of wind flattened the grass and whipped at Nathan's face. The Council of Aurelia had activated the final failsafe within the spires. Everyone and everything within them was dead. The binding stones became inert. With their sacrifice, and that of Astra's, the defense of the Garrick Mountains held. Nathan refused to let the history of his world repeat. Astra had given everything for him. He had become strong, and he knew what he fought for. It wasn't for everyone. It was for those he cared about. His champions, Anna, Alice, the Beastkin in his castle, the people who made up his day-to-day life. Now it was his turn to protect Astra. She sat next to him in the carriage as they returned to Castle Forselberg. Sarive had lent him an extra carriage for the return trip, and Nathan used it to gain some privacy. Astra's mental state concerned him. The last thing he needed was one of the other champions causing problems. Her eyes stared blankly at the seat opposite her. "Do you want to talk?" Nathan asked her. She stared up at him. Then she blinked. "Why?" "Didn't you want to talk to me? Or have I become boring now?"
"You're not," she trailed off. "It hurts."
"I know." He threw an arm around her. "But your home is still there. You'll go back. That's the important part, Astra. Nothing is forever, so long as you're alive."
"Can you kill me?" she asked him.
"No."
"Liar."
He grimaced. "I know that you can die, despite how strange your gem ability is, but I don't know how." She poked his side.
"How?"
"I'm from a world where everything ended. Falmir's plot succeeded. Messengers destroyed the Empire, then the Federation, and Arcadia. The spires then activated the failsafe inside the council chambers and vaporized everything in the vicinity," he explained. "Not the most effective way to weaponize a binding stone, but nobody even knew it was possible until then."
Her eyes bore into him.
"I died."
"Yes.
Either from the explosion or something else before it. It's possible your death is what triggered the failsafe."
He shrugged.
"I wasn't there, obviously."
"You're here," she said, and poked him again.
"I saw the end of it all. I came back."
He scratched the back of his head. "Liar."
She had him there. "I'm not a messenger. But their power is the only way to save Domar," he said. "I'm not even sure there's any difference between a bastion and a messenger. We're all connected to binding stones in some way. If you're right that my ascended magic feels like a messenger, then it only proves my point."
The only reason Nathan felt confident telling Astra this was because she couldn't pancake him at will. Her immortality remained, but her super strength was muted. Despite that, she didn't appear to be angry.
"Makes sense," she said.
"It does?" he asked.
"You know things. Your magic."
Astra looked him in the eyes.
"I believe you."
Oh, she was talking about how he traveled through worlds.
Astra's eyes turned to the window. She stared at the passing landscape with a blank expression.
"Will you fight for me?" Nathan asked her.
"Yes," she said.
"Sincerely?"
She laughed. "You're strong. Yes. Noravia says your dick is big."
"What if it's not?"
Then no. Astra smirked at him. He hit her, and she laughed again. Despite the jokes, shadows remained in her eyes. Did Omria give you your immortality? Nathan asked. Astra's expression dimmed. She looked away. Not now, she said sullenly. Either Omria wasn't the paragon of virtue her legends made her out to be, or that was a no. Nathan wondered if that was why she accepted him so easily. Astra knew things even he didn't, even if she wouldn't talk about them. So it was a big deal for her to trust a man who worked with messengers. Another day passed. Astra's communication skills waned further, to the point where she barely said more than one word to anyone else. Faye and Kiana kept her company, despite that, although Nathan noticed some furtive glances being thrown his way by the younger beastkin. He made a note of that. Kiana had been openly horny lately, and it concerned him. Nadime curled up next to him, while Seraph paced in the distance. I think being away from her paperwork has driven her mad, Nathan said. Don't be mean, Nadime said, her tails batting him in the head. She's been arguing with me about everything you dumped on us. Really? She rolled her eyes. Yes, Nathan. I realize you forget sometimes, but we think of ourselves as the thinkers of our little band. Even you called me your strategist, and Seraph runs your growing duchy.
Anna's duchy.
I know what I said.
Narime's grin made her look truly fox-like, but it slipped a moment later.
You're so far ahead of us. I understand it's difficult for you to just dump a decade of knowledge on us, but you implicitly catch things that we need to ponder for hours. Like the Falmir connection. You wormed at that ever since you heard about it, and it turns out you were right.
He shrugged. Falmir's a special case.
What about the confrontation with the Council? You slapped them in the face with your knowledge of their self-destruct failsafe. They wouldn't even talk to you at first, but you crashed right through their attempt. To say nothing of how you handled the entire situation.
Narime grimaced.
It made me realize I'm only a champion. I'm used to fighting. You're a political animal, Nathan. You know when and how to pick your fights.
I'm still only a soldier, he grumped.
Yes, that's why they all call you Lord now, she said sarcastically. I really hate to say this, but Seraph is right. You are becoming like Tonius. The difference is motivation. From what you told me, he cared about his nation. Your goals are much grander.
He remained silent, staring at the crackling fire in their camp. Nadime's hand clasped his, and her head settled into the crook of his neck. Her ears twitched, tickling him. Reaching blindly, Nathan found one of her tails and gave it a good comb with his hand. Nadime shuddered, a gasp escaping her.
Not here, she murmured.
Kiana stared at them, her cheeks glowing, and Nathan relented. Do you still support me, after all of this? He asked Nadime, unsure if he wanted the answer. Her tails curled around him. One touched his cheek.
Silly, she said, her blue eyes curving as she looked up at him. I'm not judging you. It's difficult to learn some of these things, particularly as they go against what I was taught for centuries. But I trust you. You haven't given me a reason not to.
Despite the messengers?
Like I said, you haven't given me a reason not to trust you.
Her hand touched his cheek.
Remember that, Nathan. Maybe not everyone will understand, but we see you almost every day. I chose to be with you.
I thought you said I made you my mate, he joked.
It can be both.
The next day, he traveled with Astra again.
Her mood appeared to have worsened. She ate breakfast in near silence. Close to noon, she suddenly said, "Why?" Nathan looked down at her. She didn't elaborate. "Words," he said reflexively. Astra looked up at him, her long pointed ears dropping as her brow furrowed in confusion. "You need to use more words," he said, realizing he had fallen into an old habit. "Why what?" She nodded and licked her lips.
"Why did they kick me out?"
"Of course."
"You missed the politics, didn't you?" he asked. The only response was a stare. "They're not kicking you out, Astra. The council is caught in a web of intrigue, just like me," he explained. "Right now, they have two bastions left, enough to protect both portals. But they can't trust those bastions with you. You did notice the assassination attempt, right?"
She blinked.
"Useless."
"Sure, but they tried it. The council is ignoring it because they can't simply execute all of their bastions at once. But everybody saw what happened. The moment you killed your bastion, the remaining champions were ready to pounce. It was a layered plan. Betray the Empire. Failing that, they'd remove the council in a coup. If I intervened, they'd probably just kill me with the army of champions they had. If you did, you'd be powerless, and they'd kill you."
Of course, Astra didn't need to kill her bastion. They might have simply guessed what she might have done. Whatever the case, the plan executed by the traitors in the spire was a good one. Lots of contingencies rolled into each other, and it only failed because Astra remained immortal after losing her power. Every result was a victory. Without Astra, there'd be no one to protect the council next time.
"Who?"
Astra asked.
"Who is responsible?"
"Yes."
Nathan chuckled.
"If we knew that, they'd be dead already. Tanius fingered two people. One is dead, and the other retired before the cascade. What happened to him, by the way?"
"He fell."
Two words. Nathan took that as an improvement.
"As in, off the Jorman spire?" he asked.
She nodded.
"Was that connected to the trial?"
Again, she nodded.
"Damn, the council was one step ahead. They had already arranged for a fall guy, literally. The trial had been put off indefinitely while the council handled the fallout of the coup attempt, but they had taken action earlier. With two bastions missing, they could easily calm the public with rumors about who was really responsible for the cascade."
"That's the problem," Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose. "Tanius's contacts are now dead. Nerevia worked with council functionaries rather than the bastions, but we know the other bastions are in on it, but not how."
"Kill them," Astra's eyes hardened.
"What if their replacements are also traitors? What if some members of the council are part of the conspiracy?"
Nathan sighed.
"This is why I hate politics. I know enough to avoid causing trouble at the wrong times, but I can't magically sever the spiderwebs that politicians weave. Tanius didn't know anything about the Emperor's involvement, either."
Everything came back to politics. The Emperor wanted to prevent the Nationalists from seizing power, and Nathan knew he had connections in the spires. The majority of the Council were strongly supportive of the Empire, despite the isolationist approach of the spires. Falmir wanted to expand its territory. That, too, was connected to maintaining power. Falmir's king was embedded in as much turmoil as the Emperor. To achieve their aims, Falmir had worked with the Federation. Tanius had said he was scared of a resurgent empire trying to conquer Domar. Falmir had caused everything, but the spires were the nexus. Nathan doubted Falmir had intended to cause the end of the world. Serif had been responsible for the plan to destabilize the ley lines, after all. But everyone had met in the spires, and they had been willing to cause a cascade and kill a Trigem champion for their goals. Something clicked in Nathan's head.
Fuck,
he said, rising to his feet. His head slammed against the roof.
Fuck.
Astra stared at him in confusion. He sat back down, eyes wide. Slowly, Nathan lined up the pieces in his head. A coup against the ruling family in the Empire. The threat of a massive demonic invasion from the Halkeem Desert. A repeat of the Empire collapsing and its foes carving it up. The spires either collapsing or self-destructing. Despite everything he had done, history still tried to repeat itself. This time, it was throwing everything at Nathan in an attempt to overwhelm him. Or, more accurately, Nathan hadn't identified the source of the problem. Kadria felt that this was all caused by her boss. But if Ifrit was to be believed, then everything traced back to Falmir. Were they the true enemy of Domar? Were Falmir linked to everything in his world as well? Unsettled, Nathan leaned back in his seat. Astra poked him as she slowly returned to life. Once he got back, he knew what he needed to prepare for, an attempt by his enemies to bring down all of Domar at once. Chapter 25. The castle was in a panic when he returned. A company of knights rode out to greet their carriages, Nathan's crest hanging over their arms. Riders split off, racing back to Castle Forselberg. Bells rang out. For a few brief minutes, Nathan thought that civil war had broken out. He genuinely didn't know what was going on. But the knights calmed down once they confirmed he was safe. The chaos died down. Nathan found himself in Narime's office with a dozen heavily armed bodyguards. The captain of the castle glowered at him. She had been the one to insist on accompanying him to the spires. "I was out of contact for a few days," he said in disbelief.
"You never checked in once you arrived there. We couldn't reach you through the agreed channels, and Princess Alice said you didn't respond to her,"
the knight said, pouting at him. Oh, damn. He had left the mirror behind in his rush. It hadn't occurred to him that Alice might try to contact him and panic when he didn't respond.
"Didn't anyone check my bedroom for my mirror?" he asked.
The knight stared at him in collective confusion, then stared at Faye, who attempted to look innocent.
"Faye, don't ban everyone from entering my room."
Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose. Sen and Sunstorm should probably have found the mirror, so it wasn't entirely Faye's fault. Realizing that settling everybody down was his highest priority, he returned to Garrick Pass. Everyone appeared far less excited here. Despite that, he contacted Anna and the others and let them know he was okay. Afterward, he summoned them to his fortress and explained what had happened.
"Can we really rely on the spires?" Alice asked through the mirror after he finished his explanation.
She was the only person who hadn't come in person. Even Vera had made it, as she had traveled to TARDIS upon hearing that Nathan had gone missing. Traveling from Alaik to Garrick Pass still took days.
"For now, we have to," he said. "If civil war breaks out, there isn't anybody else who can reinforce the Halkeem Desert. In order to keep them there, we need to protect the spires. We're tied to them."
"Do you think that's intentional?"
"Yes. The moment I challenged them, they rewrote the deal. I won't pretend to know what politics happened behind the scenes, but somebody wants to work with us. For now, we have a reason to work with them."
"And her?"
Vera snuck in from where she sat in the corner of the room. Her eyes narrowed at Astra. The dark elf in question ignored everyone, instead choosing to spread-eagle herself on Nathan's bed. More than a few looks had been thrown at her in envy or annoyance.
"Make eyes at her all you want, but you won't get her," Nathan said with a laugh.
"Possessive, aren't you?"
But Vera was smiling.
"Maybe, but the reality is that many bastions can't handle a trigem. It requires excellent control of your binding stones. If all it took was inserting a third gem, the world would be flooding with nation-ending warriors.
He shrugged at the looks he received.
And reactivating a trigem is even harder.
Vera raised an eyebrow at him.
And you, with all of 2 years' experience, can do it, when even Leopold doesn't have a trigem?
All eyes turned to him. He frowned.
The red-headed sorceress caught on instantly. Don't think I haven't noticed the secret you're all in on. You've always known way too much. Does everybody know why, but I'm left out?
Her eyes pierced him, but he saw the hurt in them.
Yes, he said, and she recoiled. You're being left out for the safety of your training. I'll tell you once it's finished.
Safety? She repeated.
Dangerous secrets, Astra mumbled. Binding stones.
Nathan's eyes widened, and he stared at her.
I didn't understand a word she said, Sen said, a frazzled smile on her face. I mean, I did, but not the meaning.
She's met Omria. Unlike us, she knows things even Nathan doesn't.
Seraph grimaced.
If she's happy with Nathan despite that, it only confirms that we've made the right decision to stand by him,
Narime said, glaring at everybody else as her tails rose up.
Goddess, I feel so left out.
Vera ran a hand through her hair. Nathan sighed.
I need you to become comfortable with the binding stones, the portals, and the magic involved with them. You're sharp. Too sharp, even. If I tell you everything, you might connect some dots, and that will affect your ability to be a bastion. Your ability to manipulate reality using the binding stone and form tethers is heavily reliant on your mental state. A lot of what separates bastions is their mind, not their body or their magical ability.
Once again, everybody stared at him.
Wait, does that mean the reason you're able to rebuild the castle so easily and do so much crazy stuff is because you're so confident and cool?
Sen blurted out, eyes wide.
Duh,
Sunstorm said, rolling her eyes.
Nathan's always convinced that his path is right. Can you manipulate reality without conviction?
The assassin grinned at him, and he tried not to shiver. On the other side of the mirror, Alice interrupted them.
This is interesting, and I mean it, but Astra does bring political complications. I'm going to prevent word from spreading about her. I doubt our allies in the spires want anyone to know she's missing. And our enemies will become more motivated if they realize Nathan now has a trigem champion.
Everybody else will be thrilled, Anna added with a smirk. This puts him on par with Malus, even. A trigem, 3 duo gems, a mono gem, plus Sen and Kiana. And that's only going to rapidly increase.
More was discussed, but the meeting largely concerned nitty-gritty details. Nathan had lost less than a couple of weeks, rather than the month plus he had expected. That allowed him to get back to work rather easily. Fall was here, and with it came the final harvest. Taxes needed to be collected, construction wrapped up, accounts finalized, and preparations made for winter. Many of Nathan's projects could continue despite the cooling weather, but only if the right steps were made. People didn't stop traveling due to the cold. But Garrick Pass would ice over. The snowfall made transporting heavy loads riskier, and most merchants traveled less and lighter. Risk of illness rose, which meant the healers and mages in the communities would be busy. In the cities, food supplies needed to be assured, especially given the risk that civil war might break out the moment spring arrived. Nathan didn't need enough food to supply his armies and builders for winter. He needed enough for a campaign. Seraph threw herself back into her work, but Nathan kept her from going too crazy this time. While they'd been away, the paperwork and reports had still been filed. Kuda, Anna, and her brother had done their jobs well. New nobles and administrators began to step into their roles as Anna caught up. Many of the officers in Nathan's army knew enough about logistics that they stopped asking for so much help. Paperwork still built up, but Nathan used it as an opportunity to train clerks. His reputation helped him here. Alice put him in touch with a noble in Alaik, who advertised on his behalf. Several highly experienced people applied, including branch managers of trading companies, along with the usual mass of ordinary applicants. "I'm surprised you didn't fill your offices with more fluffy beastkin," Anna joked one night. Now that the gateway was active in Castle Tardis, she visited him often. Tonight was different, as he checked in with Alice using the mirror. Nathan needed to remain informed regarding politics.
"I have enough of them already," Nathan replied as he activated the mirror. "Besides, very few beastkin have the necessary experience. A few made it through, but Seraph needs assistance now, not in a few years after we train up the beastkin."
"But you are starting," Anna pointed out.
"Starting what?" Alice asked, appearing in the mirror. "Yes, I'm using some extra clerks to train beastkin in how to manage paperwork, handle bureaucracy, and do math without their fingers," Nathan said, gesturing to Alice to wait. She pouted at him. "It's inexpensive, and we'll need more of them later."
"For when you take over, Domar?"
Anna grinned. "For when the mages finish their current research. Harum thinks he's close."
Nathan looked at Alice and brought her into the conversation.
"I've asked the mages to prepare a tool that can provide energy readings of portals. Publicly, this will be based on technology from the spires, but we'll need analysts who can use the tool and understand the portals."
Alice frowned. "Doesn't that mean teaching more people about them?"
"Yes, hence why it's a good idea to have extra clerks. Many of those I've hired won't be interested in a military job, but the beastkin will be."
Nathan shrugged.
"Once we have trained analysts, it will be easier to hire and train from the general populace."
"I see. You won't like my news," Alice said, running a hand through her blonde hair. If Nathan didn't know better, he'd suspect she had gotten out of the shower before contacting him.
"Tarbin?" he asked.
"Yes. The news about the spires losing a bastion and Astra somehow leaked, as has the fact they've entered lockdown again," she explained. "Tarbin spun it well, and he's on his way to the Haukim Desert."
"The Dark Elves aren't going anywhere."
"No, but he made enough noise that people think they might." Nathan clicked his tongue.
Damn. Even after all that, he managed to salvage it. "We'll need to talk to Tarius and the other dukes. I know you're busy, but..."
"Understood," Alice said.
He blinked, and she rolled her eyes.
"I'm busy, Nathan, but talking to the dukes is part of my duties while I support Grandpa."
Her expression darkened for a moment.
"You should visit him, by the way."
Nathan didn't like the sound of that.
"I'll reach out to Tarius and George," Anna interrupted. "I don't have any real connections to the others, other than Ilmarn setting up his companies here. You'll need to handle them, Alice." "Done," Alice said. The meeting moved on to minor affairs, as it typically did. Nathan found the regular meetings necessary, but time-consuming. While he was no stranger to routine meetings, the situation seemed tenser than it really was. Nathan expected a war to break out any day now. Reality was far more sedate, however. Nothing changed. The trees dropped their leaves. The harvest rolled in. The fall session of the Diet came and went, with nothing of note happening, other than Alice playing a bigger role than ever before. Nathan did his best to remain calm and not let his nerves show. For the first time in his life, he was actively training another bastion. Vera looked to him for guidance. Nobles wanted his advice and assurance regarding the safety of the duchy. It was a far cry from his days in the far reaches, when in service to Falmir. Eventually, a shipment arrived that Nathan had been waiting for. He let Narime and the others know, then organized to do something he had wanted to do since getting back from the spires. It was time to give Kiana her first gem, and to claim Astra as his champion. Chapter 26.
A few days later, Nathan wandered into the vault of Garrick Pass. Although the basement was the safest location in the fortress, he needed secure storage that others could access. Only his champions were allowed in the basement, after all. The result was a heavily warded and fortified chamber on the ground floor. Human guards stood beside massive knight summons outside. The door glowed with runes, was locked with magic, and was built from solid steel. Pulling it open took genuine effort. An attacker couldn't avoid the door either. The walls, floor, and ceiling were lined with magically warded steel. Nathan had added multiple wards using ascended magic, which drew from the binding stone. A duogem champion might be able to break in if their abilities specialized in penetrating magical defenses, but he doubted even Astra could. Not that he'd ask. Building this room had taken days, and he knew she would revel in destroying it if he asked her. The vault didn't contain much right now, lots of filing cabinets and currency. He vaguely knew that Kuda used the room to store a variety of currencies, precious metals, and banking notes. Prying further was pointless. Nathan understood next to nothing about how the financial system worked. As far as Nathan cared, he created some precious metals and told other people to sell them at a rate that didn't make people want to put his head on a pike. Promissory notes, complicated lending systems, different currencies, exchange rates, and other nonsense didn't enter into it. Nathan paid others to worry about that for him. These days, he didn't even create the gold or platinum that was sold. The tax revenue and financial backing from Archduke von Milgar had solidified Nathan's position significantly. Sen stood inside the room, packing various crystals, powders, and other magical catalysts into a crate. She placed cloth and straw between each of them as she loaded them in.
"Shouldn't you have done this yesterday?" Nathan asked her.
"Why do we have a vault if we're going to leave things outside all day?" she said. "Ifrit has been telling me how rare some of these things are. Like this."
She held up a small crystal bottle, no bigger than Nathan's thumb. Inside was a viscous green liquid that looked almost like someone had created a toxic version of honey.
"Dryad tears," Sen said. "Each drop can buy a house in a lake."
"More like a mansion," Nathan corrected. "The fairies only export a small amount each year. Farming the dryads in Arcadia's forests would disturb the balance or something. I heard some nasty stories about what actually happens."
"Can't say I'm surprised."
Sen wrapped the bottle up in several layers of cloth, then placed it inside a bundle of straw in the crate.
"How did you get half of this?"
"The Sorcerer's Lodge is the leading magical institute in the Empire. That makes it one of the most powerful and wealthiest institutions in the world. There's a reason they can ignore wars and politics," he explained, leaning against a steel table.
"You say that, but they didn't ignore you," Sen pointed out. "And this stuff is still stupidly expensive."
"True. But that's because I'm offering them something valuable. Knowledge. The lodge probably has a dozen of those bottles in storage. Giving me a whole bottle when I asked for a few drops is their way to ingratiate themselves to me.
Or possibly to make Nathan feel like he owed the lodge. Haram didn't run the lodge, but he was easily one of the most important sorcerers in the Empire, and arguably the world. The fact he came out to conduct Binding Stone research himself was an immense step for an otherwise neutral institution."
"Question," Sen asked. "Ifrit doesn't know the answer."
"You can ask me anything." He paused. "Well, almost."
"Uh-huh. Then I won't ask if you're banging the Dark Elf."
Her eyes curved with amusement.
"But seriously, if the Lodge is neutral, why does the Empire back them? Shouldn't they create their own Sorcerer's Lodge instead of relying on a bunch of cranks?"
"The Lodge has a long history," Nathan explained.
Realizing this might take a bit, he looked around for what he wanted. A small case sat nearby, chained to the table and locked with runes. Inside were two small velvet boxes, as well as nearly a dozen other gemstones. Nathan's magic pulsed, and he removed the case from the table.
I love history, Sen chirped, rolling her eyes.
She hefted the case full of catalysts. They left the vault. The door automatically opened and closed for them. Once outside, Nathan made a beeline for the rear courtyard. The important part is brief. Although mages today aren't very religious, they used to be, he said. Things are different when the goddess herself can be seen and heard in person just down the road.
Can't imagine why that is,
Nathan chuckled. Supposedly, Omria used to help bastions with their sorcery. I've mentioned before that she helped a bastion cast a 10th-rank spell once. If bastions are actively learning sorcery, where will they learn it from?
The lodge, Sen said slowly.
Yep. So mages became a major power in the world, supported by Omria, and independent of the bastions and the Emperor. I've seen some texts that refer to them as her third arm, but that didn't appear to be the common view. The Emperor and nobles ran the Empire. The bastions protected it. The mages improved it.
So why the split? Sen asked. Ifrit knows this part, but not why the Emperor didn't create his own lodge.
Because the original Empire split into three parts. Falmir, Trifome, and the Empire you know today. If the Emperor pisses off a bunch of independently wealthy and powerful mages who have connections to many noble families, then they'll leave, Nathan explained. To say nothing of the political downsides of going against a cornerstone of the country's history. So long as the lodge stays out of politics, everybody is their friend.
Except now, she said.
That is the risk. It's why I'm surprised they're backing me so strongly. If the nationalists win, then the lodge will suffer.
Good thing they won't.
The conversation naturally ended as they stepped outside. Several knights huddled together, chatting, while Narime and Astra stood next to each other in silence. Kiana fiddled with her uniform, her eyes wide and tail swishing back and forth wildly. Sunstorm's onyx still hadn't arrived, so she wasn't here. Nathan suspected he would need to personally chase that up. Snow drifted off the nearby mountains. The pass had already become too dangerous to travel through, which indicated a harsh and bitter winter was on the horizon. Sleet fell most nights. The sky was a dreary gray, and the landscape similarly dull. Soon, fall would give way to winter. The moment one of the knights spotted Nathan, the huddle broke up. The knights lined up and stood at attention, their hands banging against their chests in a salute. Kiana joined them afterward. She smiled at Nathan, as she also gave a salute. Only Astra remained where she was, as Narime slipped behind Nathan. For now, he ignored the dark elf. Since returning, her mood had improved. She spent time on the wireless every day, in contact with a few people from the spires. Nathan didn't pry, although he listened in once. Astra said little, as was normal for her, but the women on the other side prattled on about anything and everything. They spoke rapidly, and Nathan barely understood what they were saying at times, given his poor mastery of the dark elf language. But he silently thanked them for the time they spent talking to Astra, even if she didn't respond much. Knowing that she was still welcomed by her people helped her adjust. Nathan ignored her for now. He focused on the six women lined up nervously in front of him. All but one were beastkin. Nathan knew one of them well, as she handled all of Faye's paperwork. She had been Narime's first pick. Her name was Kara, and she was a dog beastkin. They were rare to see in the military, as dogs didn't have many physical advantages. Instead, they excelled at hunting and tracking. If Nathan asked Sen to describe Kara, he'd be told about her massive tits. Faye and Kara supposedly knew each other from the academy. Privately, Nathan wondered if they bonded over their chest size. They were opposites in almost every other way, which worked out for Kara. Supposedly, she had failed to be placed as a champion candidate after finishing her time in the academy. Faye had invited Kara to join up once she became captain, and realized that meant doing paperwork. The other candidates were less notable to Nathan, other than Kiana, a pair of wolf beastkin plus a huge girl with goat horns. The human woman wore a battle mage uniform, which set her apart.
"She's my pick," Sen mumbled, when Nathan stared at her.
"I'm not second-guessing anyone," he said. "You, Naughty May, and Faye have been going through everyone for weeks. I've given them all trial enhancements as well. Personally, I'd prefer to wait a few more months, but..."
He trailed off, biting his lip. Civil war loomed on the horizon. If something happened over winter, he needed champions who knew how to protect his portals. Nathan felt confident he could enhance this batch without hurting anyone, especially with all the mental magic training he had done. He hadn't probed Fire again. She visited with Anna and kept trying to sneak into his bed, despite Faye's efforts to keep her out. But Nathan didn't feel confident enough to go back into her mousetrap of a mind. The women in front of him stared at him nervously. He paced in front of them, looking each in the eyes.
"All of you know why you're here. I've already spoken with each of you," he said. "After today, you will be champions, defenders of the Anfeng Empire. I will trust you with my life, the lives of thousands of soldiers and millions of innocents who know nothing about the horrors of the demonic portals. The power and knowledge I will give you will allow you to fight. But they are useless if you will not fight."
He stopped at the far end, then turned around.
"This is your last chance to back away. Once you become a champion, there is no turning back. You might find a new bastion," he received multiple looks of disbelief, "or even retire, but you will always be a champion. The power never leaves you. The knowledge remains in your mind. I might ask you to do things you never thought imaginable."
A long pause. Nathan waited for anybody to move or to say something. Naturally, they didn't. Kiana was already a champion, so she didn't need to hear this. Four of the five candidates were Beastkin Knights. He doubted they cared about his warning. The last one was a human battle mage, and he worried about her the most. But her expression expressed only conviction.
"I'll explain how the process works now, and what happens afterward. If you choose to leave, no one will judge you. If you want to become a champion, I will require you to affirm it, and I will know if you're lying. As I've explained before, becoming a champion allows me into your mind. I won't read your thoughts or deepest secrets, but I will know things about you."
Afterward, Nathan told them about the stages of gemming, and that they needed to decide on their enhancements. They could change them, but once they chose a gem, they were locked in for life. He then explained what their responsibilities would be once they became champions. Finally, he walked up to each woman. One by one, they confirmed that they wanted to be a champion. Nathan enhanced them. Their minds quivered at his touch, and two of them actively fought him. His extensive experience, and one subtle use of mental magic to slip past mental defenses, allowed him to finish the process without harming anyone, although they certainly enjoyed the process, judging by their lewd gasps and moans.
"I've never seen someone enhance five champions at once before,"
Narime commented afterward, as she gave him a mug of coffee.
"It's as inappropriate as I expected."
Kiana stood nervously in the courtyard, being watched by everyone. The new champions watched her in a daze, sitting on chairs in the empty outdoor dining area. Sen drew a ritual circle around the horse girl, saving Nathan the effort of doing it himself. It also served as good practice for her. While Sen's training had shifted back to being a spellblade, she still needed to remember how to cast rituals and the like.
"I'll be honest.
It's concerning that it went so well, Nathan told Nadime. Especially when some of them only have a few weeks of preparation.
That says a lot about your experience, doesn't it?
Maybe. He disliked the alternative. That his ascended magic allowed him to bypass a lot of natural restrictions. Did he even need to wait out the usual time for a champion to acclimate to the Binding Stone? If he could control magic itself, couldn't he gem a champion sooner with no ill effects? Despite the danger, Nathan suspected he would be testing his theory sooner rather than later. Duo-gem champions were far more powerful than mono-gem champions. If he was able to give Kiana a second gem before the Civil War broke out, it would make a huge difference. For now, he would give Kiana her first gem. Nathan undid the lock on the case he had brought out. Then he retrieved one of the velvet cases. Inside was a diamond gemstone, far larger than anything worn in any piece of jewelry. Other gemstones often appeared unrealistic given their size and shape, but diamonds were common enough that the sheer size of champion gemstones stood out. There was a reason they couldn't be purchased on the open market, to say nothing of the magical processing they needed to go through in order to be safe for use in the gemming ceremony. Gem quality was no joke. A champion burdened with a low-quality gemstone might never be able to receive a second gem, and would always lag behind others. As expected from Leopold, Kiana's diamonds were nearly perfect. They were nearly colorless, and Nathan didn't see a single blemish inside it. The shape didn't matter, as Nathan reformed it during the gemming ceremony to fit into the collarbone. But for the record, it was rounded, with dozens of flawless, flat edges cut into it. Naturally, its magical conductivity was as high as any gemstone Nathan had used.
"She's ready," Sen chirped as she returned. "Stop staring at the gem and stick it in her."
"Sen," Nadime chided. Nathan rose and walked up to Kiana. She stared up at him with wide eyes. Her breathing accelerated with each step he took. The top of her uniform had been lowered, burying her shoulders, collarbone, and the top of her modest bust. She'd need to get it tailored later. "Calm down," he said gently. "Nothing will go wrong."
"I know, but..."
She gulped.
"What is the ritual circle for? I don't recognize it."
"I need to conserve energy for Astra's ritual," he explained. "It's also safer." Nathan didn't usually bother with the ritual circle. It was for Bastions who needed help to focus the energy from their binding stones. He knew what he was doing, but he wanted to be extra cautious with Kiana. "You're certain you want a diamond?" he confirmed.
"Yes."
Her face filled with determination. Taking a deep breath, Nathan let go of his concerns. Kiana wanted this. He pressed the diamond against her collarbone. It exploded with light as he channeled energy into it. Kiana's eyes widened, but she remained silent. Her tail nearly spun 360 degrees, and her eyes shot up. Over the course of close to a minute, Nathan pushed the diamond into Kiana's body. Tears dripped down her face. Even so, she refused to make a noise. The first gem always hurt the most. Afterward, she remained standing. A crooked smile crossed her lips. He placed a hand on her head and tickled the white fluff in her ears. Before she growled at him, Nathan dove into her mind to finish the ceremony. She welcomed him into her mind. His connection to her remained strong from the enhancement, and he followed the tether. The moment he passed the outer layer of her mental defenses, he knew something was different. Kiana's emotions and thoughts wrapped around him. Not aggressively, but they were simply there. They circled him. Deeper and deeper he went, and more of her deepest emotions and memories wrapped themselves around him.
If he wanted to, he could reach out and learn her darkest secrets. Fae had bombarded him with her desire to ride his cock for all eternity. Kiana held back and simply ensconced him in herself. Only when he reached her core did he realize what was going on. He needed to use her emotions and thoughts to forge the gem into her mind. By doing this, her connection to him would become permanent. Enhancements weren't permanent, even if they changed the bodies of champions. Gems were. Now that he knew how the tethers and binding stones worked, and their relation to mental magic, he understood the process so much better. He also knew how other bastions had been able to read their champions' minds. Had they instinctively grasped mental magic, but kept it secret so that they weren't accused of heresy? Nathan had only worked out how once he started investigating wards against mental magic. This process didn't just attach the gem to Kiana. It bound her mind and essence to the binding stone. Using the gem and Nathan's